It is not by chance that we arrived here today. We've been looking for something larger than ourselves. Inside of us, there is a yearning, a calling, a hope for more, a desire for a place of belonging and caring. Through our struggles, someone nurtured us into being, installing a belief in shared purpose, a common yet precious resource that belongs to all of us when we share. And so we began seeking a beloved community, a people that does not put fences around love, a community that holds its arms open to the possibilities of love, a heart home to nourish our souls and share our gifts. Welcome home. Welcome to worship. Those were the words of Reverend Kimberly Ann Tomczak Carlson, and I'm Reverend Bob LaValle, and I'm delighted to be joined here today by our music director, Susan Peck, and our worship leader, John Eldridge. And I also want to welcome via video, Reverend Emily Wright Magoon, who recently moved to Albuquerque and who is presenting our Time for All Ages today. Our DJ today is Cy Schuster. Our tech team is Chris Paul, Jordan Jones, Vance Bass, and Raymond Wolfgang. Okay. Speaking of the power of community, our community of tech volunteers makes it happen every Wednesday for Vespers and every Sunday service. Thank you very much. John has an announcement for us.
Good morning. Great to be with you again. And happy Valentine's Day. Happy cold, blustery, 8 degrees Valentine's Day. The research psychologist Barbara Fredrickson reminds us that love has a lot more to do with just the romantic kind. It's a much broader, inclusive experience. She writes in her book, Love 2.0, forget about the love you typically hear on the radio. The love you crave lies within the momentary experiences of connection. When you're truly connected with someone else, your trust in that person expands. Your relationship and loyalty deepen, and you want to spend more good times together. We'll hear more from Dr. Fredrickson later in the service, but we have a following announcement. Last fall, more than 35 members of First Unitarian participated in the Beloved Conversations program offered through Meadville Lombard Theological School. Meadville is offering a new session this spring, and registration is open now. The content of the spring session will be all new, so prior participants are encouraged to take the program again. This program offers meditations on race and ethnicity and uses a variety of learning modes like large group meaning making, small learning pods, and individual study. For more information, check out this week's broadsheet. A link to the broadsheet is in the chat bar. That's our one announcement for this morning. Let's all work together to make ours a great morning.
Let's light our chalices in my office and in our homes. May we be the beauty of beloved community. May we be the dream. Come, let us worship together.
Good morning. Will you please join me in our opening hymn? I'm putting the words in the chat bar right now. This is a longtime congregational favorite, For All That Is Our Life, by Bruce Findlow and Patrick Rickey. We've sung it before in the sanctuary, so please join me in singing For All That Is Our Life. Is our life, we sing our thanks and praise for all life is a gift which we are called to use to build the common good and make our own days glad. For needs which others serve, for services we give, for work and its rewards, for hours of rest and love, we come with praise and thanks. And all that is our life. For sorrow we must bear, for failures, pain and loss, for each new thing we learn, for fearful hours we pass, we come with praise and thanks. For all that is our life, for all that is our life, we sing with thanks and praise. For all life is a gift which we are called to use to build the common good and make our own days glad.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Isla Rose. Please join me in the children's affirmation. We are Unitarian Universalists. We are people of faith with open minds, loving hearts, and helping hands.
Hi, I'm Reverend Emily Wright Magoon. My family and I recently moved to Albuquerque, and I'm so delighted that Reverend Angela and Reverend Bob have asked me to tell you a story today. One day, a traveler trekking through the desert came to a town. Her clothes were dusty and tattered. Her shoes had holes in the soles. Hungry and tired, she said to herself, "Surely someone in this town can share a little bit of food." It was quiet and the doors were all closed, but she knocked on a door. Eventually, it opened just a bit, and a woman said, "What do you want?" "Please, I am hungry. Do you care? Will you share? Do you have any food?" The woman squinted, her eyes frowned, and tartly said, "No, there is no food here." And she closed the door. The traveler wandered wearily through the town, knocking on each door. But everywhere the answer was the same. "I don't care. I won't share. There is no food." The traveler sat to rest beside a well in the town square, and she thought to herself, "If there really is no food in this town, these people are in greater need than I am. I should make them my magical soup." So she climbed up on the edge of the well and she shouted so the whole town could hear, "I am a master cook. If anyone in this town has a big pot, I will make the most delicious soup anyone has ever tasted. Stone soup." It was quiet on the town square, but eventually a door slowly opened, creak, and a child emerged with a pot almost bigger than she could carry. She said, "Here's a pot. Stone soup, huh? I'm curious." "Thank you. Watch and see," she said with glee. She filled the pot with water from the well, and she built a fire under it. And soon, people around the square began to gather, curious as steam filled the air. She said to them, "This here stone soup will be nutritious, delicious, edible, and incredible. But it does require a special, magical ingredient. I am certain we will find it in this town. But first we need a stone. That'll be a good one. And of course, a bit of salt and pepper. Oh no, I seem to have misplaced my salt and pepper I always carry with me. Oh, it won't be as good without it. Maybe. But why ask for what you don't have? We'll make do." But then someone said, "I could spare a bit of salt and pepper." "Thank you. Bring what you've got. Put it in the pot. We're making stone soup." "Oh," she said, "I remember that time we had onions. Oh, that was delicious. But we'll make do. Why ask for what you don't have?" But another townsperson spoke up. "I could spare an onion." "Excellent. Bring what you've got. Put it in the pot. We're making stone soup." "Oh, and that one time we had carrots. Oh, those yummy tender carrots. But I mean, that would be just divine, but why ask for what you don't have?" "Perhaps I could spare one carrot." "Excellent." And then another said, "Well, if you're bringing a carrot, I could probably spare half a cabbage." "Bring what you've got, put it in the pot. We're making stone soup." A magical thing happened, friends, as each person opened their heart a little to give and realized that the little that they had would make a difference. The soup grew and grew, and soon everyone was shouting out, "Well, I've got some broccoli. I have some herbs. Would quinoa go well in stone soup? Sure. What are you waiting for?" the traveler said with delight. "Bring what you've got. Put it in the pot. We're making stone soup." Everyone in the town went home to bring something to put in the pot. The soup grew and grew, and soon a wonderful smell filled the air. It was so tempting that people brought out bowls and spoons and tables and chairs and picnic blankets, even bread and cheese and cider. Soon everyone was gathered together, having a marvelous feast. Some folks brought out harmonicas and guitars and banjos, and there was dancing and singing, storytelling and laughing long into the night. It was the best party the town had ever had. And to think, it was all made from a stone and one special ingredient.
Let's pause the chat now for a few moments of meditation and prayer, and we'll turn it back on during the joys and concerns. Let's bring our hearts together. As we think about meditating, we're reminded that our rational thinking minds are essential for living. We need to analyze and decide to function, but sometimes our thinking minds are so cluttered that they crowd out that other important part of our minds, our instinct or intuition. Let's take this opportunity to step back from our busy thinking minds and give our intuitions an opportunity to emerge. Take a few breaths. You can close your eyes, or leave them open, but maybe soften your focus. Feel where your body is supported. Maybe where your feet are resting, where your hips are resting, your back. Where are your hands? Now feel where the breath is occurring in your body. What moves when you breathe? If it helps, place a hand on your belly and feel it rise and fall. Turn your attention to your breath. Don't try to control it. Simply be a witness to your breath. And we'll sit in silence for 2 minutes.
Valentine's Day, so often associated with romantic love. Yet so much love exists outside of the endocrine rush of romantic love. Our church is brimming with many types of love that we share when we post our joys and our concerns. Please share first your joys in the chat, and then later, when prompted, share your concerns also in the chat. If you're unable to write in the chat box, please email the church at caring@uuabq.org.
Thank you.
when we share our joys and concerns, we see each other sharing our burdens. We see joy for both having heat and for having it be cold outside. And certainly joy for being able to go to church from our living rooms over Zoom. And we have joy for water coming from the sky, which we so desperately need, and joy for vaccines, and for thunder snow, and making snow angels, and for the quiet that the snow brings, the temporary reprieve. Joy for reconnections and reconciliations. Joy for the opening of the tiny houses. And concern for those who are not in a tiny house, who are left out unhoused in the cold, trying to survive. And concern for Rex Crofton and Patrick Rodriguez's mother. And concerns for the future of this country in this time of transition, of hope and concern and possibility and worry, all so real, all so present. All these we lift up to the great powers of celebration and healing and renewal, known by many names. Let's join our hearts in prayer. We lift up Beth Orrell's mother-in-law, Dorothy Orrell, who passed this week at the age of 104. May the memories of Dorothy comfort Beth and her family, and may light perpetual shine upon her. We remember Mary Hurst, congregant of First Unitarian, who passed this week. May she live on in the hearts of this congregation, and may light perpetual shine upon her. We pray for Kathleen Rode as she recovers from surgery and begins chemotherapy. May the love of this congregation surround her as she heals. Today we pray for the words of Reverend Howard Thurman. In the quietness, we seek to know how we may learn to be more sensitive, to be more charitable, to be more gracious, to be more sharing, if indeed we are to be true to ourselves. We make a sacrament of our determination to be better tomorrow than we are today, to be more thoughtful of our own needs and the needs of others, to be more gracious in the way we live, to the end that through us there shall come no violence to anyone. Through no word of ours shall there be a heart broken or a spirit injured. We make a sacrament in this regard that we may be blessed. And may we all be held in the heart of love. Peace be with you.
And also with you. Will you join me in singing? The words are in the chat bar. As you would do, and I may If you will show me acceptance, then I may learn to give as you would do. Then I may learn to give. When I am troubled, will you listen to me? When I am lonely, will you be my friend? Will you be there for me, comfort me tenderly? Will you share some of your feelings with me? If you will show me commitment, then I may learn to give as you.
Our reading this morning is titled Gate A4 by Naomi Shihab Nye. Wandering around the Albuquerque Airport terminal after learning my flight had been delayed 4 hours, I heard an announcement. If anyone in the vicinity of Gate A4 understands any Arabic, please come to the gate immediately. Well, one pauses these days. Gate A4 was my own gate. I went there. An older woman in full traditional Palestinian embroidered dress, just like my grandma wore, was crumpled to the floor wailing. "Help," said the flight agent. "Talk to her. What is her problem? We told her the flight was going to be late and she did this." I stooped to put my arm around the woman and spoke haltingly. "Shudoa. Shubiduk ebiditi stanyi shikte minfadlik shubit siwe." The minute she heard any words she knew, however poorly used, she stopped crying. She thought the flight had been canceled entirely. She needed to be in El Paso for major medical treatment the next day. I said, "No, we're fine. You'll get there just later. Who is picking you up? Let's call them." We called her son. I spoke with him in English and told him I would stay with his mother till we got to the plane and ride next to her. She talked to him. Then we called her other sons just for the fun of it. Then we called my dad, and he and she spoke for a while in Arabic and found out, of course, they had 10 shared friends. Then I thought, just for the heck of it, why not call someone such as some Palestinian poets I know and let them chat with her. This all took up to 2 hours. She was laughing a lot by then, telling of her life, patting my knee, answering questions. She had pulled a sack of homemade mamul cookies, little powdered sugar crumbly mounds stuffed with dates and nuts, from her bag and was offering them to all the women at the gate. To my amazement, not a single woman declined one. It was like a sacrament. The traveler from Argentina, the mom from California, the lovely woman from Laredo, we were all covered with the same powdered sugar and smiling. There is no better cookie. And then the airline broke out free apple juice from huge coolers, and two girls from our flight ran around serving it, and they also were covered with powdered sugar. And I noticed my new best friend, by now we were holding hands, had a potted plant poking out of her bag, some medicinal thing with green furry leaves. Such an old country tradition. Always carry a plant, always stay rooted somewhere. And I looked around that gate of late and weary ones, and I thought, this is the world I want to live in, the shared world. Not a single person at that gate, once the crying of confusion stopped, seemed apprehensive about any other person. They took the cookies. I wanted to hug all these other women too. This can still happen anywhere. Not everything is lost.
I became a Unitarian Universalist back in the early 90s when I first joined First Church in Jamaica Plain, which is that's a neighborhood of Boston, Massachusetts. It's a small church, you know, maybe 120 members, 70 folks in attendance on a good Sunday. And I visited that church to start because they always had catchy signs outside their building that said things like, "Never lose a holy curiosity." And I stayed in that church because folks in the congregation were nice to me. And I became a passionate Unitarian Universalist as I learned the theology. I also learned something in that small church about the power of groups. Among our members, there were a lovely young family with two young daughters, and one day we were shocked and scared to hear that the mother had breast cancer. It was a woman in her 30s. The family asked for help from the congregation during her treatment. And I saw that church show who it really was. Congregation rallied and they provided meals and childcare and rides during her chemotherapy. They even scrubbed her toilet for her every day. Was wraparound care. Sadly, the young mother did not survive. So a month or so after she passed, the father brought his girls to Sunday service at the church. It's the first we'd seen of them since the memorial. During joys and concerns, he walked up to the front of the church and began to talk. He said, "I want to thank you for everything you've done for my family." He began to cry, describing all the ways that the congregation had helped him and his girls and his late wife. He finally cleared his throat and said, "Your hands are God's hands and you are God's people." And we wept with him that day. And it crystallized in me an understanding that something magic happens when a bunch of individuals become a group, become a congregation. And I'm going to pause here and kick my dog out of my office. I'll be right back. All right. We give thanks for the blessings of old dogs, pets in general. I was talking about the magic about when a group, a congregation gels, the great things that happen. You know, that magic, that indefinable thing speaks to such an important part of my theology. There's so much that I don't understand about the mystery. There's so much that I don't understand about the divine, but I do believe this. We conjure the holy through our relationships. We conjure the holy through our relationships. What I mean by that is when we come together in a way that we know in our core is right, when we encounter each other with compassion and care and authenticity, we make a connection. Something else comes into the world, some special energy, some extra unquantifiable thing is created that wasn't there before. The holy is conjured. You know, I love our theologically diverse congregation with its huge variety of ideas about God. We all have something to teach each other about the divine, and that makes each of us wiser and more whole, more grounded. So when I talk about the holy, I'm inviting each of us to consider what the holy means to us, whether we have a very specific idea or just a general feeling, or if we just let the mystery be. I'm saying that healthy relationships are holy, And I'll leave it up to each of us to decide what that means. That moment of conjuring the holy can take many forms. It certainly can arise from a conversation or a warm embrace. It can be the product of a mutual commitment. And it doesn't just have to be between humans. Have you ever worked in a garden and afterwards somehow felt lighter, more grounded? Have you walked or rolled through a landscape and sensed the connection to something greater? Have you made a decision about how you're going to spend your money and became more aware that something good was in that decision? Sometimes conjuring the holy happens in hard situations and painful situations. When we choose to leave an unhealthy example, or unhealthy relationship, for example, as painful as that may be, that can bring the holy into the world. When we stand up for the most vulnerable among us, the holy stands up too. But I want to talk specifically about groups and what groups can do. I think healthy groups offer two powerful gifts, support and accountability. You know, the famous humanitarian Albert Schweitzer told a story about geese. There was this group of geese who were migrating together, and they decided to take a break. And they saw a pond with lovely gardens around it, and they swooped down to rest there. And while they were there, a gardener captured one of the geese and trimmed its feathers before letting it go back to the flock. Well, after a day at the pond, the geese began to rise up off the pond to resume their migration. The goose with the trimmed feathers tried frantically to lift off into the air, but it was no use. The other geese, seeing this goose struggle, tried to encourage him. But a goose can't fly with trimmed feathers. When that became clear, the flock settled back into the pond, even though they really wanted to keep migrating. They waited together several days for that goose to grow back its feathers. And then, and only then, did they finally all rise together and continue their long flight. Such is the nature of support in a healthy group. I told you that story about my little church in Boston, and both that story and the goose story remind me of something that I heard Reverend Christine Robinson say. And I heard it in, of all places, a commercial for the city of Albuquerque. And it was a series of short bits of people saying things about how the city needs to pull together. And suddenly there was Christine, and she said, "What happens to one of us happens to all of us." What happens to one of us happens to all of us. That kind of thinking is how groups conjure the holy. Rather than thinking about the strongest, the most prestigious members of a group engaged in sacred work considers its most vulnerable members. It slows itself to include everyone. It offers support in the ways that the vulnerable ask for support. You know, not everyone knows this, but as a Unitarian Universalist minister, I am required to join the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association. I pay dues, go to meetings. I'm actually the secretary of the Mountain Desert District. And I am so grateful for that requirement because I get those two things. I get loving support and compassionate accountability. Because I belong to this group that is so much bigger and smarter than me, I get guidance on ethical behavior and skillful ministry. I don't have to figure it all out on my own. But you know what's hilarious? Even as I so appreciate the UUMA, I still grate at the idea of being told what to do. I have my little resentments about this rule or that, and I'll quietly pout and sulk about it. But we've all seen clergy go off the rails in very public ways. And I've noticed that the most spectacular ministerial dumpster fires usually happen when that religious leader is not bound to a strong denominational body, a denominational body that supports and holds accountable. Accountability is the other gift that groups give us. In groups, we see and are seen, and like it or not, our speech and behavior has impacts on people. And the people in our groups reflect back how our words and acts land. Sometimes it's positive, sometimes it's negative. But when we're in a group, there's no avoiding hearing how we are received. When healthy accountability happens, we're pulled into our better selves, sometimes despite ourselves. Now, unlike the UUMA, people can choose to belong to a church and they can leave when they want to. And that can be a challenge to having accountability. There's a classic story that every church can tell. There'll be some longtime congregant who's active in the life of the church, but like every human being, they bring their wounds and blind spots to the life of the church. And hopefully they're finding healing and insight in that community. And then one day they make a mistake. They lose their temper or say something deeply hurtful. Maybe they overstep a role or breach confidentiality. Specifics don't matter. For one reason or another, they fall out of covenant. And just stepping back, let me be clear. I'm not talking about anybody at First Unitarian Church. I haven't been here long enough to hear the stories. I'm talking about my experience in other churches and my colleagues' experiences at their churches. Anyways, after the falling out from covenant, in a healthy congregation, there's a call to accountability for this person. And hopefully that call is made with compassion and in a way that allows that person to keep their dignity even while they're being asked to grow. And so often, I've seen that moment as a breaking point. Rather than face accountability and be uncomfortable, but come back into covenant, the longtime congregant leaves the church. It's heartbreaking, and it's a missed opportunity for everyone. I'm sure everyone can remember a time in their life where they had a small or large conflict with someone. Sometimes the worst part of that conflict is waiting while we avoid the inevitable conversation that we have to have. I remember when I was in college, I was sharing an apartment and doing the classic roommate thing of not paying my share of the telephone bill. I knew it was an issue. I knew it was causing tension, but I was so afraid to broach the topic. I avoided it the best I could. But finally, one of my roommates, caught me alone and insisted on talking about it. We worked it out. I was so relieved. And he pointed out to me afterwards that 10 minutes of tense conversation was a small price to pay for the long-term harmony of our apartment and our friendship. And that guy is still a close friend of mine a long time later. You know, that moment of accountability, small as it was, actually made me a slightly more mature and responsible person. I still had a long way to go, but it was a growing up moment. And no matter how old we are, we still need growing up moments. So how's this work in groups? Well, I want to talk about a funny thing that happened while we were planning last week's retreat for the new board. So we enlisted the services of the very wise Reverend Nancy Bowen to facilitate our retreat. And she and our board chair, Michaela Renz Whitmore, and our vice chair, George Bakula, met ahead of time to talk through the agenda. A part of what we wanted to accomplish was to explain the duties of the board to our new board members. And Nancy laid it out in three broad principles, three big duties of a board member. The first was care. And Michaela and George and I nodded. Can't argue with care, right? The second was loyalty. Sounds good. And then Nancy told us the third principle, obedience. And there was a long moment of quiet. And then I said, well, that's not a very Unitarian word. And we all burst out laughing. But Nancy was right, absolutely right. It's part of the role of the board that when the board comes to a decision, we all obey and support it, no matter how we argued against it before the vote. When we belong to a group, the group asks for a certain kind of obedience. It's uncomfortable to hear that, isn't it? It even makes me a little uncomfortable to say it out loud, I'll be honest. But obedience has a kind of power to it. It implies humility and the requirement that we give up some autonomy in service of the greater good. I read a great article by John Beckett, who is the former vice president of the Continental Covenant of Unitarian Universalist Pagans, John Beckett. And he wrote, if your deep desire is to find a place where you belong, but your top priority is that nobody's going to tell me what to do, you will always be disappointed. All healthy groups and traditions have boundaries and standards. That's what John Beckett said. He said, if your deep desire is to find a place where you belong, but your top priority is that nobody's going to tell me what to do, you will always be disappointed. And he writes that because sooner or later, the tradition is going to ask for accountability. But the beauty and power and morality of groups lies in the fact that accountability is an opportunity for growth. In our discomfort and frankly embarrassment, we see how we can do better, and we are stronger for it. And speaking from my own painful experience, people really love it when we admit that we are wrong. They just eat that up. First Unitarian is a congregation, a group, where we conjure the holy in so many ways. We are, first and foremost, a religious community. We come together seeking companionship on the journey, seeking consolation because life is hard, seeking guidance to live well, and then seeking the inspiration that gives us the energy to live into that guidance. In this community, we do extraordinary acts of justice, and we socialize, we're friends, we raise money, we do all kinds of things. But at heart, we are a spiritual community, serving the spirit and letting that radiate out into the ways that we live in the world. After the pandemic came, Anzo and I had to make the hard decision to shut down the campus. And we talked a lot about what our ministry goals would be during this unpredictable and isolated and genuinely hard time. And we agreed that there were three qualities that we wanted to promote in everything that the church does: connection, engagement, and resilience. Connection, engagement, and resilience. Fundamentally, we are saying that we must turn to each other in this time. And in that turning, in the connection and engagement, lies our resilience, our ability to endure. When we come together at Vespers, when we meet on our committees, when we share joys and concerns, we're looking at each other's faces, when we're looking at each other's faces and services, when we are alive together in this congregation, we are conjuring the holy. Even in this online time, we are a community. We are a group with intention, with support, with accountability. We are this church. And may we find our resilience together. Amen. And blessed be.
Continuing on with the topic of love and in introducing our offering this morning, Dr. Barbara Fredrickson tells us, love allows you to really see another person holistically with care, concern, compassion. Within each moment of loving connection, you become sincerely invested in the other person's well-being, simply for his or her own sake. You can make an offering online by clicking on the link that we'll put in the chat box. And if you prefer not to give online, you can simply send a check to the church. This quarter's change for the future recipient is the American Civil Liberties Union of New Mexico. The ACLU of New Mexico protects and advances justice, liberty, and equity as guaranteed by the constitutions of New Mexico and the United States. It is especially focused on groups that have been historically disenfranchised. Let us now exercise the enduring power of our generosity.
Ever wonder how the ties that bind, getting broken all to pieces, then mend themselves time after time? When mom and dad might sometimes let you down, or they never mean to hurt you, they'd take it back if they knew how. And sometimes friends will feel like family too. If you trust them with your secrets, they might just turn their backs on you. And if it's any consolation, dear, it gets better by and by. So just make the most of this old life. It's only love that gets you through. It's only love that reminds you who you are, your very own North Star. And oh, it's only love, it's only love, it's only love, love, love. Ever wonder how the bravest soul gets shaken to its core and then bounces back completely whole? I bet it feels like you're the only one with your hands up in the air, your heart up in your throat just holding on. Trouble finds you in the darkest place like a heat-seeking missile, and your tears are burning all down your face. If it's any consolation, dear, it gets better by and by. So just make the most of this old life. It's only love that gets you through. It's only love that reminds you who you are, your very own North Star. And oh, it's only love, it's only love, it's only love, 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 love. If it's any consolation, dear, it gets better by and by. So just make the most of this old life.
What is generously given is received with gratitude. Thank you on behalf of First Unitarian, and thank you on behalf of the ACLU of New Mexico. We're approaching the end of our service, and we invite you to stay after and linger in our breakout rooms. And I have a little conversation prompt, either online or live. I want to ask folks, when has a group in the church supported you? And when were you held accountable? That's one that requires a little bravery. I put that in the chat. Let's extinguish our chalices, shall we? And so we continue seeking a beloved community, a community of people that does not put fences around love, a community that holds its arms open to the possibilities of love a heart home to nourish our souls and share our gifts. Go in peace, gentle people, and practice radical love.